This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America's relationship with China. Diplomacy between the world's two largest economies remains characteristically choppy. But could the result of the U.S. presidential election unlock a calmer future? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show.
More traffic chaos around Belfast city centre. Is there any planning as to around not closing as many roads at the same time? All coming up on The Nolan Show this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show.
Good morning. So, more traffic chaos on the way in the centre of Belfast. The Boyne Bridge will be demolished. It is near the new Grand Central Station. The work to start it will begin on Saturday. It will last 12 months. So you can imagine all that traffic coming off the M1 onto the West Link, coming down the Grosvenor Road. For the next 12 months, that is going to be a traffic nightmare for some people. Translink are saying, get out of your car, get on the bus, use public transport. Why is this the lead story this morning? Because you've got to be aware, first of all, as to what you're facing over the next 12 months. I've said it before, traffic chaos is not just about frustration. Traffic chaos is about getting to your hospital appointment. It is about getting to work on time so that you're not sacked. It is about domiciliary care workers being able to move around the city, move around to help some of the older, the most vulnerable in our community. So traffic is not a moot point. It is at the very heart of everything we do each day. This work, as I've said, will last 12 months. Durham Street, which runs across the bridge, will close for a whole year. You won't be able to access it from the Grosvenor Road. And TransLink's message, get onto the buses, get onto the trains, abandon your car. The current bridge near Sandy Row was reconstructed in 1936. Its origins date back nearly 400 years. Some local campaigners are up in arms. They say instead of demolishing the bridge, it should be preserved as part of the major revamp of the area. We'll talk about all of that in a second. Let's start with the business person, the entrepreneur. He owns a shop in the centre of the city, Chris Souter. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Stephen.
This traffic chaos is going to impact on people being able to get into the city centre to do whatever they need to do, including shopping, and this is going to last a year.
Yeah, Stephen, it's as if just the city's being strangled at the minute. You obviously understand there's other roadworks going on as well, Great Victoria Street, Dublin Road, then we have the Sydenham Bypass that's being closed at the weekends. It's like death by a thousand cuts. Business is still very difficult, just all around, all over the city, all over the country. And this is just another little issue that we now have to deal with. We're still coming out of that kind of COVID hangover, trying to get our feet back together. All the energy prices are still through the roof. Now, people are out shopping, so there's definitely positives to be taken on this, Stephen, but quite rightly so, the media jump on this and are going to tell the country that Belfast is literally a closed shop. I'm on today, number one, to find out why all these roadworks seem to have happened at the one point in time. Like, where's the planning in that? And number two, to tell people to please come into the city and please keep shopping. So
you're going to tell people to come into the city. But look, how long is it going to take? We keep on talking. Like, this programme is built on bread and butter issues. for the last 20 years. It's tried and tested as to what, when you talk about politics, you talk about the news, actually what do people care about? They care about things like this. It's not about the granular detail of some document that's sitting in some committee in Stormont. It's about issues like this. So where is John O'Dowd, the minister, in terms of communicating with the public? He has said that he's asking his department to review what they can do around the general traffic chaos that there is. At the end of the day, we need infrastructure, we need roads improved, and John is doing that. But how chaotic is it going to be? How much disruption are we all going to face? And what can be done about it?
That's the thing. And I think once now these plans are in place and the works are started, that's us stuck in it. There's actually nothing we can do. And Stephen, whenever I heard you say that at the start of the programme, that it's going to take 12 months, like just even say that again, 12 months, a year. Like most other roadworks in other countries around the world can be done. Like things like this can be done in a matter of days, if not weeks. Now, I fully understand. I believe the Boyne Bridge is being taken down to be relocated somewhere else as the heritage piece. And I totally understand that. And that needs to be given priority. And that will be given priority. But 12 months, Stephen? Like, come on. Again, it just seems nice. Stephen, I sound like a broken record every time I'm on the show, that I keep saying it just feels to me, and it feels like a lot to the other general public, that just nobody's in charge. Where was the planning in this? Where was the person in charge of all the roadworks to say, well, we can't do that because if we close that road, that's going to lead to more traffic. We can't close that road because that's going to lead to more traffic. You know, where was the strategic planning in this? Like, where's the person in charge? Who caused this?
They're closing this road, these roads around the Boyne Bridge from this Saturday. That's when it starts. Then every week up till Christmas, they're also closing a lane on the Sydenham Bypass. Now, that's part of a £3.8 million resurfacing project in East Belfast. So, look, they're pumping money into the roads. They're improving them. We would be gurning if they weren't. However, both at the same time.
I know.
In the run-up to one of the what should be the busiest trading period for Belfast city centre, they're closing the roads around it all at the same time. Why?
Stephen, I've had numerous phone calls yesterday with business owners, and we just have no words for it, Stephen. And again, you made a good point earlier on that it's not just about business. This isn't just about me and my wee business and all the rest of the guys around me. It's about those healthcare workers and people getting to their hospitals, and just about the general public. It's a shambles. It really is. And I honestly don't know what we can do about it now, because if the spade's in the ground and the workmen are ready to go, and what can we do? They can't just tell the guys, because these businesses that are doing the roadworks will have had this in their schedule of works coming up. They can't just go on to something else. So we're stuck with it. So for me, it's up to Belfast City Council and all the departments now to try and create a roadmap or some other way to get people around the city. Like, I get Translink's point to get on the buses, Stephen, but the buses are still, our public transport system is still not fit for purpose. You'll just have to look at social media to see the amount of people.
Well, look at Grand Central Station. Look at the work they're putting into that to improve it for us. So maybe we should try it. Maybe we should abandon the car and do it.
I think it's going to be a better job eventually, Stephen, but how long is eventually? You know the way things take forever in Northern Ireland. I don't know what it is about this wee country, but we just can't seem to do anything quickly. And it just takes forever. And the problem with to go back to the business and the retail side of things, once people get out of their way and out of their routine of where they go to shop on certain days at certain times, they find other places. And do you know what, Stephen? I'll say it. Some of the colloquial towns around the outskirts of Belfast are brilliant, and they've got brilliant retail offering, and they've got brilliant shops and brilliant service. And by the time the people that will be maybe coming to my shop or coming to other shops find somewhere else, it's really, really hard to get them back. So this could be very, very detrimental to business. And Stephen, also another wee thing that I want you to touch on over the next couple of weeks, coming up to Christmas, I don't see from any of the stakeholders that Christmas is going to be any better from a city dressing and festive dressing than it was last year. So it's not even as if the departments and the council are actually doing anything better in Belfast this year to counteract the traffic problem, to drive people into the city, to help businesses out. I'm just lost for words, Stephen.
The questions I have for our political leaders this morning is that, look, traffic is important. moving, as we've described this morning, obviously is important. So is there any group collective thinking here led by the Department of Infrastructure? And look, we'll get in contact with John, the Minister, John O'Dowd. We'll invite him on to speak to us all. But could there be any collective thinking where, for example, we are encouraging, oh, we've already bid for John, he's not available, okay. Where there could be collective thinking about encouraging some people to work from home so that we are reducing the traffic flow, or other initiatives, or even a public message as to where, what roads should we take? What alternative routes are there around these roads? How much extra time should we be giving ourselves to get into work? Are they guaranteeing us this work will be done within a year? And all that comes with it. Billy Dixon, spokesperson for the Transport Hub Alternatives Group. I'm standing over this being our lead story today, Billy, because it affects many of us.
Good morning, Stephen. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show. First of all, can I make a correction of what you said? Not your fault, of course. You're just reporting what you see. But the Durham Strait is not the Boyne Bridge. Boyne Bridge was never Durham Strait. It's always been
Sandy Road. Durham Strait runs across the bridge, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. Without spending time on that, but I could spend time explaining why it never was Durham Strait. But I think there's more important issues here rather than that name at the moment. For 7 years, first of all, because of the traffic situation at the moment, I think the first thing I should say is that for 7 years, we have been trying to get our MLAs to review all the plans. Now, we obviously are concerned about the culture and the history, but also the safety of passengers going to buses and trains. Now, all MLAs received printed information from the retired roads manager that if the bridge is demolished, it will provide, which would provide a safe underpath to and from the station and replaced by a curtain crossing, then it would become an accident of black spot. It would result in delays, injuries, and even fatalities. All can be avoided by keeping the bridge. In fact, to bring it up to date, if they kept the bridge, it would save a lot of the present difficulties. Now, again, it takes a lot of time to explain all
so
that.
Let's focus, Billy, on what you foresee over the next year in terms of the disruption. Are you worried?
Yes, I'm very much worried, but as far as the community is concerned, the bigger issue, apart from the road situation, is the taking away of our cultural rights. We had 800 Sandy Row residents who signed declaration cards objecting to the plans to demolish the bridge, and they authorised the Transport Hub Alternatives Group to represent their views. And we would now call upon Translink to stop the work that will be going on the bridge.
Well, it's not and stopping.
It's starting
this Saturday.
I know that, but we're even at this late stage, and to review their plans.
Okay.
Now, we have obviously people within the Transport Hub Alternatives Group who are now looking at ways in which they can influence that decision. And we urgently, and because I think it's not only to do with history, it's to do with safety of people going to and from the station. There needs to be a review, and there needs to be a review now.
Billy, thank you very much. 03030 80 55 55. By the way, we're standing over, it's on the maps, it's BBC reporting, we're standing over that this is affecting Durham Street and the Boyne Bridge. Chris in Belfast. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Look, have they thought
before? Sorry, go ahead.
Have they thought, for example, Chris, and look, I'm not advocating, I'm not allowed to advocate anything, opening up the bus lanes to everybody. But have they done any type of analysis as to weighing up what's the better short-term thing to do here over the next year when families and kids and care workers are sitting in chaotic traffic? Would it be to more benefit to temporarily open up the bus lanes, or would that be to the detriment of us as a community, Chris?
Driver, I'm not saying open it to everybody, because I understand they need bus lanes for the buses to make, you know, for less cars on the road. I understand that. But in other cities around the UK and Europe, taxis are allowed to use bus lanes. Now, it's only disabled taxis.
Oh, you don't want them open to everybody. You just want them open to you.
No. I was on you before about the Dublin Road. Remember, if you remember a couple of months ago there, and about the cycle lanes and about we couldn't get pulled in. Since then, they've now put a bus lane in. And the other point they're making is now the Boyne Bridge is coming down. You're coming up Hard Street. There's a 24-hour bus lane for buses only to turn left. So taxis can't get up to Robinson's and stuff. We can't turn left. We can't go. So where are we supposed to go when the bridge comes down? You were supposed to go up round and round. And that means now we have to travel around the whole town now to try and sort this out. You know, like, it's actually ridiculous. And I totally agree with Chris Souter. I actually know the fella, and he's right. It is a disgrace who is making these decisions. It is absolutely a disgrace. They don't talk to the people on the ground. They just do what they want. It's for transit. Let them do what they like.
So for you to get to, what are you talking about? Describe
when you're coming up the back of City Hall, that's Hard Street, yeah?
Yeah.
And you want to turn left onto Hard Street, or sorry, Great Victoria Street. You can't do that no more. It's a 24-hour bus lane for buses only to turn left. So what you do is you go up past the Fitzwilliam, you turn left heading for Glengall Street. Oh, wait, the bridge is coming down. So where do we go now? You know, it's actually ridiculous. It is actually ridiculous. So that's just adding to the traffic. And then you've got the Dublin Road. They've now, since I last spoke to you, they've now put a bus lane down it too.
I've seen it.
Yeah, so what I mean, and there's all these cycle lanes, you can't get pulled in. I've told you before, I told you on the show a while ago, and I said, don't quote me on it if you remember me.
Yes.
That's me, that's Chris. So what I'm saying is, it's ridiculous. These bus lanes are adding to the problem. They are adding to the problem. They removed the one at the Odyssey because it was a nightmare. Like, they aren't talking to the people on the ground. They're sitting in an office there doing what TransLink want them to do. They're not thinking about anyone else but themselves.
Well,
they need to talk to all of us.
What they're thinking about is the environment. What they're thinking about is encouraging people to get out of their private cars. Look, I wonder, is there a strategy here, Chris Souter, to make Belfast...
Well, I'm Chris Kelly now. Chris,
no, I know you are. Chris Souter's here as well.
Yeah, I know Chris, yeah.
I wonder, Chris Souter, is there a policy to make Belfast so unwelcoming for a private car, Belfast City Centre?
Yeah.
That there's nothing wrong with that strategy?
Stephen, I hear you. And honestly, that's what it seems to me. And again, if you look across the socials, that's what it looks like to the vast majority of the general public.
What's wrong with that? Think about if that was a strategy, if they did pull that off, think about how much that would protect the environment. Think about how that would change habits. Now, think about the parking that people would save if we changed the habits.
Yeah, and I suppose, Stephen, once you change the habits, or to change the habits, you need to have a fit-for-purpose public transport system, which we just don't have, Stephen, and we are a long, long, long way off it. So do you strangle the city first? Do you ruin the businesses in the city? Do you put people off coming to Belfast so that maybe 5-10 years down the line we've got a fit-for-public transport system? Stephen, it doesn't work. It needs to be drip-fed, and I understand that TransLink are probably doing their best, but their planning and DFI's planning needs...
Well, they're telling you. They're telling you, get out of the car.
They are. Absolutely. That is exactly what it feels like. And again, they're reading what Chris Kelly says there. They don't talk to the taxi driver, Stephen. You go to any city in the world, any city other than us seems to have a brilliant taxi service, yet nobody listens to the taxi man. Do you know? And they're getting hammered left, right and centre. They can't even pull in to pick up people. They can't use the bus lanes. Stephen, it's a nightmare.
Well, Stephen,
but the taxi guys could pick up where the public transport system falls down.
Stephen Anton is from Phonacab. Morning to you, Stephen.
Morning, Stephen.
How's this affecting your business, and has there been much consultation?
It has affected our business. I think it's affected every taxi company. Certainly, we have looked at the stats of how productive our drivers have been in and around the city centre from before the work started to where they are now. And we would suggest that drivers are probably doing around about 10% fewer jobs in and around the city centre on average. Now, 10% might not sound like an awful lot, but it also then contributes to fewer people getting picked up, late pick-up and arrivals. You mentioned there about getting people into public transport. If we're sitting in traffic, the cars are producing higher emissions. It's longer journeys for passengers. There's a lot of different things, but it certainly is having an impact on our business in the city centre.
Is it pushing taxi drivers out of the industry?
I wouldn't say it's pushing taxi drivers out of the industry, but taxi drivers, as you know, in Northern Ireland are mostly self-employed. And whenever a job is issued by a company or instructed by a driver or by a passenger, rather, a driver has a choice whether to accept that booking or not. Now, I know we've discussed in recent months about Hill Street, for example, and whether Hill Street should be pedestrianised. And a lot of taxi drivers will say these days if they get a booking in Hill Street, they won't take it because they don't want the hassle of sitting in Hill Street in a queue of other vehicles.
But how are these? Look,
It's kind of the same in the city centre at the minute as well. They're a little bit more reluctant to take city centre jobs.
Well, imagine, look, even think about that. You're one of the major taxi companies in Northern Ireland. You've been around here a long time. Your drivers are now reluctant to pick up in Belfast city centre.
Shocking.
The capital city, all of those shops and businesses. Like, this is how important this is. I hope the minister is aware of this, the Department of Infrastructure. We need to find out from them what their ideas, what their solutions are around this. And I'm sitting here, look, it's October, and you know, we plan out the Nolan Show. I'll tell you what, Stephen and Chris, this programme is going to be inundated. You can imagine the programming is going to be in December. This programme's going to be full of people talking about the inability to get around Belfast city centre.
It's so bad, Stephen. And you know what, even just saying that's actually giving me a wee bit of a shiver, because any business... Like, we've been in business 32 years, Stephen. We have a real strong wee business in that city centre, and we're a destination shop. People come from all around the country and the island to come to our shop. We're only a month and a half, 2 months, like everybody else's business, away from the flipping bread line. You know, away from the door. So I'm like, this is important, Stephen. I'm so glad you ran this as the first story. This is important. If the message is, don't drive your car to Belfast, or don't come to Belfast if you want to take a car. We are a car society, and I know we got to work.
Well, maybe we've got to change that.
I know we do, Stephen. I know, but it's just, it needs to be drip fed. It can't just be thrown at us like this, with closing every dipping arterial route into the city and just strangling the place. And you know, there will be business, Stephen. Very possibly, there could be business that go bust out of this. And this is the truth. This is not me trying to sensationalise. There could be business that go bang out of this, because if the media, as you quite rightly will, keep talking about this, and the Department of Infrastructure and the council and all the guys won't actually help it out by giving us routes and giving us ideas on how to get around this, Stephen, people will stop coming to the town, they'll stop spending.
The idea of getting around it is get on a bus, get on a train. That's what TransLink are advising to do. You're saying that the infrastructure isn't there, that the public transport network is not good enough for us to do that. We need to test that out too, don't we? Someone that disagrees with all of you this morning, Chris McCracken, Managing Director at the Linen Quarter. You think this is a good thing to be doing now, Chris?
Well, actually, I'm going to come on your programme and do something different. I've clashed with Chris Suter many times, but I'm actually going to agree with him on 2 points. One, please do keep coming into Belfast City Centre. We've got Restaurant Week on this week. We're coming up to Christmas. There's plenty to see and do, so do make your way in. And second, this is a failure of strategic planning and a failure of governance. If you go back whenever this was first planned, there was also going to be a £30 million public realm around the train station that was being put in by the department. There was £100 million on cycling infrastructure that was due to be put in for Belfast. And there was £150 million for the North-South Glider. And we've seen how successful the West-East Glider has been. So the North-South Glider would have taken... Each glider takes 105 people off the roads and into a glider. It was Stormont coming down in 2017 that really stopped all of that happening. So it's not TransLink's fault. They've done the station, they've done their part, but it's all the other bits that went around it that was supposed to support this didn't happen. And those people who at the start of this year, last year, were saying that don't worry about bringing back Stormont because it doesn't really do very much. Well, you can see how wrong that is. Stormont is essential to the governance of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, but come
it's
on.
Really important that we have it here. But that's the failure that we are now facing today.
Well, look, here's the score. It is the 9th of October. The city, December is not that far away. I'm a radio presenter. That's it. Whose job is it to grab this, grab it hard, and get something sorted before December? What can we do?
We are where we are, and we all have to try and pull together.
So what can we do?
So there's a few things that we can do. First, we need better enforcement on the roads and on the bus lanes, because maybe cars parking on a bus lane is causing obstruction. So we need to be tighter on that. There's a very specific issue around the traffic crossing at Great Victoria Street. Now, that's actually one of the busiest streets, if not the busiest street in Belfast city centre for traffic. The sequencing of that, I think there's some concerns that maybe that's not aligned properly, and maybe we could just smooth that out a bit to allow a better flow of cars. But each of us need to take some action as well. So if you think about journeys in the city, 36% of journeys are less than 2 miles. Now, a lot of those are by car. Can we as individuals maybe just get out of our car a little bit more? And I know this doesn't apply to everybody. If you're older, have got a disability, I'm not talking about that. But there's plenty of us that could maybe get out of the car and just walk, or maybe take a bike. And that's 36%.
Take a bike in the freezing cold, in the snow, and the rain.
If I take a bike today,
yesterday, whenever it was, when it was pelting down with rain, I'm coming in here soaking. Take a bike.
Plus, I'm fat.
How do I take a bike at 19 stone? Like, these are the realities.
Well,
you know, these are the actual realities. How do I get on a bike?
You can, for a short journey, if you're going less than a mile.
Short journey, I live in Cumber.
Okay, and I'm not saying, I'm talking about those shorter journeys within the city centre, but that's 36% of journeys. We could all do more. Now, I'm not saying that applies to everybody. Everyone's got individual circumstances, but there will be plenty of us that could take that action. Now, I don't think cars are going to remain the dominant form of transport in and out of this city. So those coming from outside of Belfast, well, you know, this, no one is saying don't take
the car. Here's an alternative. Chris Souter's going to go boogaloo at me raising this as a question. Why are we talking about Belfast city centre and the need to get into it? There are plenty of shops outside of Belfast city centre. There are shopping centres. There are shops up and down the Newton Arch Road and Bangor and elsewhere. And maybe, Chris, and look, it's unpalatable to you, but maybe the strategy here should be for people to consider going anywhere but the city centre if the chaos is there.
Yeah, Stephen, which Chris? There's too many Chris this morning.
Chris Souter.
Oh, mate, right, yeah, there's... Stephen, as I said before, there's a definite possibility that once people change their habitual ways they shop and the habitual places they go, that they do not come back. This is a very real problem. And I also want to just reiterate that point that no business in Belfast is safe from going out of business, and we need to be consistently busy. You know, business is so hard, Stephen, with all the costs and the wage costs and the overheads, and it's just every day is a struggle. And I know people look at business. Many people look at business owners and go, "It's all right for you. You've got a business. And you make a fortune and blah blah blah." Stephen, if only they knew how hard it was to keep people employed, to keep the PAYE paid and the HMRC off your back and the VAT paid. And it's an absolute nightmare, and we need everybody pulling together in all our shops and our local towns. But yes, there is, just to go back to your point, there is that chance that once people get out of that habit that they don't come back to the city.
New train services are starting on Sunday, so there's another opportunity for people to consider dumping the car in the driveway and using public transport. It's not just buses. The new train services are starting at Grand Central, are they? Oh, there we go. On Sunday, 0303 80 55 55. We'll pause for a sec and get the news from the BBC. We need to contact the newsroom and ask them what the curlew are. I've never heard of them. Does everybody know what the curlew are? I'm being told they're birds, are they? Curlew. They know everything in that newsroom. I have no idea what they are. Victor in Belfast. Good morning, Victor.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, Boyne Bridge closed. Work's gone on there for a year. You're coming off the M1. You're going onto that West Link. You're coming down the Grosvenor Road. You're screwed. You won't be able to get down it.
Come on, Stephen. It's not that bad.
Sydenham Bypass. Lane closed. Traffic chaos we've been hearing about. So what are we going to do?
I'm down in beautiful County Down.
Are you?
A wee 2-day break. Get out of the big city.
2-day break now?
No, right now. I'm sitting in beautiful County Down.
Why aren't you out working?
I took a wee day off here, Stephen.
Did you?
I'm hitting a big 6-0.
Did you report it or are you on a sickie?
No, I'm hitting a big 6-0 this Friday, so I'm having a wee run up to it.
Right.
Up on the 50th birthday. But here, Stephen, whinging taxi drivers, all they do is whinge. I have a few close friends who are taxi drivers, whinge. That's all they do. All they do is drive, then go to the bookies, follow the football team, and then whinging business owners in Belfast City Centre. Belfast City Centre is done. It's had its time. It's finished. Our arterial routes into Belfast should be what they are. Routes in and out, and we should just get back to living locally, shop locally. Why do we have to drag ourselves to the Belfast City Centre?
Well, where would you shop?
Well, I would shop local. Listen, Steve, I get up in the morning. What do I need in the morning? I need a loaf of bread and a pint of milk and a cup of tea and, here. Just that simple life, which we're happy to get back. Stuff we all want more and more in Belfast City Centre and go out my business. I made a living in Belfast City Centre for a lot of years. An old friend of mine introduced me. We wanted to sell letters. The letters, 2 for £1.
Did you sell those?
Oh, Stephen, my God. I started off 2 for £1. 3 for £1, 4 for £1, and ended up at 5 for £1. And then here, oh, glad you couldn't. I wasn't going to do the same selling.
Did you make good money?
Stephen, not really, but it was just a lovely way to make a couple of pounds and out in the fresh air in Belfast City.
Are the boys not still selling those now? And girls?
Everything changed. Then it was all illegal. It was the city council, the Chamber of Commerce that didn't. They thought we were a bit of a nuisance on the street. So they were, in the end, they made us legal and they brought us aboard and gave us licenses and all. But then it all just changed as life changes. Life moves forward. And
3 gaslighters for £1. I remember that.
Yeah. I can only meet a man. And I say his name because he has a hugging person. He was a pound. He didn't even say pound. He said pound.
That's right. I used to love that.
My God, he could say that. Sparklers, 2 packets.
There was no D in the end of pound, was there?
That's right.
3 gaslighters for £1. And then Teleo. Do they still do that anymore?
No, and then Christmas paper. Get your Christmas paper, 10 sheets for £1.
They don't. And they don't sell it. Teleo. That's gone now from the city as well, is it? Is it sooner?
There was no electricity about the town. People moving back and forward. And oh, my God. The boys went through with their carts cleaning the streets, real people. Look, I would love Belfast City Centre to go back to what it was, but you can't. You just don't live in the past. Belfast City Centre now is cosmopolitan. The university, there's a lot of students, and that's what it's going to be. It's going to be coffee shops, it's going to be people, tourists coming here, standing here at the weekend.
Do you like the sound of this, Chris McCracken? Chris McCracken?
It's an international cosmopolitan city. I mean, the caller's right. But it blends the both. I mean, there's still most businesses are independent traders. So it is a unique city. And that's what people love about it. You come into Belfast, it's not like any other city in the world. And it's that blend of local people coming in, it's the blend of workers, blend of tourists. That's what makes it so exciting. And that's why
Belfast City Centre. You're trying to suggest Belfast City Centre is a unique place in the world. It's not like any other city in the world.
Well, that's not me saying that. If you look at a lot of the tourism reviews and the magazines, they're all talking about Belfast.
What's different about it?
As I say, over 50% of our retail businesses are independent. The food offer, as I mentioned, we've got Belfast Restaurant Week on this week. The food offer is absolutely outstanding.
And look, of course you're going to sell the city. Of course you're going to sell the restaurants. But you're not going to tell me that the food offer from Belfast is this amazing, unique place in the world where nothing gets better now, Chris, are you?
Yes, I am, because the produce that we have is unique, and I think everybody recognises that. So this is not just benefiting Belfast, this is benefiting our farmers and people who are supplying food products. And it's world class. I mean, those products, the meat, the vegetables, the things like the Jawbox gin, these are unique products that you can only get produced here. And we bring them into our restaurants. And that's why people love coming here, because they don't get that offer anywhere else.
Okay.
Stephen, can I come in on that here?
Yes.
So McCracken agreed with me earlier on, which is, that pig will fly. Chris, thank you. I'm going to agree with McCracken here. Jesus, a bromance. Yes, our restaurant, Stephen, I have to agree with them. The food offering in Belfast is literally world class. It's incredible. And it actually leads into this lead story. It's under fire too, Stephen, because people cannot get home. I was speaking to a couple of hospitality businesses last night in the city centre that say people are booking earlier, they're leaving earlier. The live music venues are struggling because people can't get home from them. So bands are wanting to finish earlier. Like there's places open to 2 o'clock, and yet the bands are trying to finish at like 10:45, 11, because certain people have to get home, and the crowd just disappears at 11 because they can't get home. So it leads into this transport issue. If we want a vibrant world class city, which we do and can have with the offer, we need the people to be able to get in and out of
it. Well, Stephen, Anton, you're one of the operators, phone a cab. What do you predict for the Christmas period here?
This is going to be tricky. We're doing everything we can to try and bring more drivers into the industry, but demand still exceeds supply of drivers, and that's not just going to be Christmas. You've seen how the mornings are starting to get darker, the afternoons are starting to get busier with the weather getting worse, with more people in and around the city. There's already big demand on our drivers for all taxi companies at most times, and I say that demand just gets busier as we move into the festive season. Now, there's things that you can do to try and help your situation, to help get you home that little bit easier in terms of how you book your taxi and where you get picked up and all the rest of it. But I think the thing most people have to realise, whether it's traffic or whether it's demand, we all just have to, relax is the wrong term, but we all just have to realise that we're going to need to leave a little bit longer for our journeys, book a little bit earlier, and just be prepared for delays, whether that's down to weather or whether that's down to demand or whether it's down to roadworks. So we just need to be a bit better planned.
Okay. Stephen, thank you. Pat, the taxi driver, finally. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Stephen.
So
sorry to hear about your mum. I hope she's feeling better.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Pat. So, the Boyne Bridge then. Work's going to last a year. You know that route. Coming off the M1, onto the West Link, down the Grosvenor Road. Major traffic disruption for the next 12 months.
Stephen, just imagine Saturday, whenever this Boyne Bridge closes, Durham Street closes, you've got the Sydenham Bypass closed as well. Right? So coming down Great Victoria Street, people cannot turn left anymore to Fitzwilliam to go up to Grosvenor. So they can't do that. They have to head on in to Millfield and go up the falls around the Grosvenor and down. But so we've got the train station opening as well. So we've nowhere to drop passengers because they told us to use Glengall Street. Glengall Street is a one-way street which is accessed from Durham Street, so we can't get around that way. They say to drop at St Andrew's Square. St Andrew's Square is at the back of the Europa Bus Centre. So to get to that, say I brought somebody from the City Hall, I would have to go around Hard Street, up Bedford Street, on the Dublin Road, out on the Great Victoria Street, down Great Victoria Street, turn left, and turn in at the Hampton Garden.
So do you get a sense that this is planned? When you imagine people sitting at their desks in Stormont planning this all out, do you get a sense that there's been expertise around this?
Stephen, there's been no consultation, right? So nobody knows. The first I knew of Durham Street closing on Saturday was whenever one of your researchers contacted me yesterday. So the DFI do not engage with anybody. Taxi drivers, major transport providers throughout Belfast, we have not had any communication with the DFI or TransLink. It seems as if they've just done what they want. But on your show, it's been said umpteen times, we need to get customers out of cars on the buses. They're trying to make TransLink go into profit. They haven't been profitable in 30 years. So this, I think it's all stealth. You know, your man said the other week about the carrot and the stick. They're beating taxi drivers. They're beating motorists with a stick to beat us out and go on to transport. But how are these people going to get into this Grand Central? How do disabled people get there? Where are they walking from? What roads are blocked, Stephen? This is gridlock. 11 weeks to Christmas and they're closing Belfast. They're destroying it. There's no point in me even going to work. Do you know what I mean? So what are they doing? What is the big picture, Stephen?
We'll try to find out for you and right, we'll continue the programming Stephen, around it. Stephen. Pat, let me leave it there if you don't mind. We'll come back to this, I promise. 030 30 80 55 55. 14 minutes to 10 this Wednesday morning. Don't forget Nolan Live on BBC One tonight at 10:40 and, of course, on the iPlayer. So, he's just 26 years of age and now he's the deputy leader of the Alliance Party. Is this too young? Owen Tennyson, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
I say there is it too young, and that's ageist, isn't it? But are you nervous about being so high up a party at such a young age?
Well, look, it's daunting but exciting in equal measure, Stephen. In Alliance, we're all about diversity. And for us, it's about ensuring that at every level of the party, we are representative of the community that we are seeking to serve. I'm very fortunate that I'm joining a leadership team with strength and depth. I will be working alongside Naomi, but also our team of whips in the Assembly and Saoirse at Westminster, who have a wide wealth of experience. I myself, though I am younger than your average applicant for this role...
You're younger than the Good Friday Agreement.
I am, but I have spent my entire adult life in the Alliance Party. I have now been elected in frontline politics since 2019 and was a member for a year preceding that. So I do have significant experience in elected frontline politics, but I think there is a real opportunity, Stephen. I do represent a new generation in political leadership in Northern Ireland, a generation which was promised in 1998 a better future, a more united future. And despite the fact that we have made enormous progress, it is also true that young people today still grow up in a society where children are educated apart, where peace walls divide communities, and where paramilitary organisations exert a toxic influence. That's why I've stepped forward, because I am able to articulate the broken promises that were made to that generation and to work with my colleagues in the Alliance Party to push for that more inclusive
future
that only we can deliver.
Your party, Owen, has been part of that executive. Your party, if there are failures in government, your party's been part of it for quite a long time.
Absolutely, Stephen, but it's a question of the kind of government that we have. I mean, we have been consistent. When the executive came back, for example, earlier this year, we were coming from a position where we had no government at all. And so people wanted a government, irrespective of what makeup that government was and what the institutions would look like. But we have been clear, we will play our part. We will contribute, we will work to make devolution function and deliver for people. But what we want to see is reform of the institutions to remove the vetoes which have allowed Stormont to be pulled down in 5 of the last 7 years, but which have also blocked progress when government has been up and functioning.
Well, the other parties are too powerful for that. You're not, you're being aspirational here. You don't have the clout to do that.
Well, no, it isn't aspirational.
DUP, Gavin Robinson is committed, hasn't he? To not collapsing the institutions, but Sinn Féin haven't.
No, those commitments haven't been forthcoming. And already we've had a number of instances where events have taken over and where people have been worried about the stability of the Assembly in the short number of months since it returned, which I think highlights the need for reform to ensure that government is copper-fastened. But in terms of our influence, Stephen, we were told prior to 2016 that we needed to go away and win more seats and come back. We did that. We more than doubled our presence in the Assembly in the 2022 election. We were then told by the UK government that we'd won the intellectual argument. But this isn't a debate club. This is about governance and how we deliver for people in Northern Ireland. So the new UK government now needs to step up to the plate and engage. But we have also been successful, Stephen, in moving the Irish government's position on reform of the institutions, which is hugely significant. We will continue to make that argument, but we'll also continue to work to grow the party over the next 3 years ahead of the next cycle of elections to grow that influence even further. Because ultimately, it will take alliance to break the system if we are going to secure the kind of government which can deliver properly for everyone in Northern Ireland.
The reason, of course, you're the new deputy is because your Westminster plan didn't go according to plan. Stephen Farrey lost his seat.
Well, yeah, look, I'm absolutely gutted, Stephen, that Stephen Farrey was unsuccessful in the previous election. But Stephen leaves behind a huge legacy, 30 years of public service. And he has made a huge contribution in terms of contributing to the Brexit debate, in terms of our public finances, in terms of being a stalwart for liberal values. And he leaves huge shoes to fill.
Should he have been just handed the job at Ulster University, or should it have been a more competitive process so that everybody had a chance?
Well, look, that's a matter for the university, Stephen.
You're the deputy leader of the party, and you must have an opinion on it.
And Stephen is now a private individual who has resigned.
But you're a public individual and a key position at the Ulster University. Nobody else had a chance of getting it. How do you feel about that?
Well, it isn't unusual for specific roles with very specific requirements to be headhunted in any sector, Stephen. So it's not unusual. But I'm not going to get into details in terms of commenting on Stephen's employment at the moment. Stephen is now a private individual who has left frontline politics. But what I can say is he leaves behind an enormous legacy. And yes, it was disappointing that we lost the Westminster seat in North Down. But that's what the next 3 years are about. That's what I'm excited to get stuck into, is learning those lessons and building our party organisation in those areas where we have had setbacks.
You mentioned, Owen, working alongside Naomi Long. What is she like to work with? And now that you're up there right beside her, she's the leader, you're the deputy leader, do you differ often? Like, do you have healthy disagreements often? How close are you to her?
Me and Naomi are very good friends. Naomi has been a mentor to me over the past 6 years that I've been in the party, and has been enormously supportive of me and all of the new MLAs.
But every leader needs to, every leader, be it in charge of any organisation, needs someone close to the top who challenges them and has the ability and the authority to do that. I'm talking about in any organisation, any political party, the BBC, anywhere. Have you got the clout, the authority, and have you got good practice at challenging Naomi?
Well, Stephen, in terms of my authority in the party, I mean, I have just won a deputy leadership election within the party and have achieved the confidence of our party members. So, yes, I do have the confidence and the authority, but I am really fortunate that myself and Naomi have the same vision for the future. We are a united party and alliance. We want to see a more progressive, united and inclusive Northern Ireland. In every organisation, yes, day to day there will be discussions and debates around how to vote on a particular motion or on the best way forward in terms of party strategy. That is normal in any organisation. But we're very fortunate that as a party we're pulling in the same direction. And we're also very fortunate to have a leader as formidable as Naomi, who has taken the party to new electoral heights. So I'm really excited at the prospect of working alongside her. And I think we have demonstrated to other parties in this deputy leadership election just how to do internal democracy. I mean, Kate Nicol was a formidable opponent. She ran a fantastic campaign. And I'm really lucky to call Kate a colleague. But you'll notice in mine and Kate's campaigns, we didn't actually differ on our vision for the future or on policy. It was about differences in emphasis, and it was about debates about party development. I think that is a real strength in the Alliance Party, that we're actually a truly united party to build a united future.
I guess, though, the challenge for you, Owen, on this promotion and a much bigger job now within your party, is are you going to bring anything different to the party now that you are the deputy leader? Because I get it that there is a huge political strength in the messaging around you're all a coherent group and you all agree. So why take the job then? What are you going to seek to change within the party?
Well, what is different, Stephen, is that traditionally Alliance's electoral strength has lay very much east of the Bann. And I'm someone who grew up west of the River Bann and who has a very working class background and a rural perspective. I'm also somebody who represents a constituency outside what might be considered Alliance's traditional heartland. So my role over the next few years is very much about going out into those associations in the party where we don't have elected representatives, going out into those communities whose trust we need to win in the west of the province, to gain their trust ahead of the next council and assembly elections. I'm not pretending that we're going to sweep the board in the west of Northern Ireland in the next electoral cycle, but I do think that there's work that we can do now to make important breakthroughs. We have done that in places like Omagh and Limavady already, and I see real opportunities to build further for the future.
How can anybody trust anybody senior within your party in terms of voting if you won't tell the public whether any of you prefer a united Ireland or a united kingdom? Like, how is that building trust when all of you have this central groupthink that none of you are decided yet?
Well, it's not the case that no one who votes Alliance or no one who is a member of Alliance has a view on the constitutional position. We are a party, Stephen, of people who are unionist, people who are nationalist, and people who don't...
But you see, that's fair enough, but you won't tell anybody.
And
you want to build trust. Might that need to change? What would be wrong with an Alliance party with you being open and saying, here's my preference, Naomi being open, here's my preference? What would be wrong with that if you're building trust?
I am open about my position, Stephen. My position is that I am not aligned on the issue. My position is that I want someone to show me what the proposition is.
And so coincidentally, and everybody else in the Alliance party is not aligned on the issue. Could that be true?
I want to be involved in a conversation about what the options are and how different constitutional arrangements would work. I'm open about my values in terms of building an open, progressive and internationalist society, and I will judge any proposition against those values. But more than that, Stephen, the question about whether we live within the Union or in a united Ireland is not a question that the Alliance Party or the DUP or Sinn Féin will answer. That is not our job. Our job is to deliver for people in terms of a cohesive health service, in terms of dealing with the cost of living, in terms of tackling the environmental challenges that we have in the here and now. The question about whether we live within the UK or in a united Ireland is a question that will be put to everybody in Northern Ireland in a referendum, and it's a question for the public to answer. So I'm very comfortable in that position, and the increase in numbers of people who vote for Alliance who want us to prioritise the here and now whilst respecting that there is a live constitutional debate is happening. It is absolutely where we are, and absolutely, I believe, the right position to take.
Would your party, under now your senior leadership, ever meet the LCC?
No, under no circumstances. And I think that is a real stain that almost three decades on from the Good Friday Agreement, when these organisations were supposed to leave the stage, that we have a disgusting situation, frankly, where the Education Minister is sitting down to consult an organisation like the LCC about the education of children and young people. People in those communities living under threat and fear of paramilitary control and influence deserve local representatives who will face down those kinds of community
and
gatekeepers, not amplify their views.
How much further challenge will your party be placing on Sinn Féin and their public pronouncements around McMonagall?
Well, we were in the chamber on Monday asking questions about the issue. There are still questions remaining, I think, for Michelle O'Neill and for Sinn Féin. We can't hold them responsible, of course, for the actions of an abuser, but we can hold them responsible for the clear organisational failing and for the inconsistencies that have been apparent since this story broke. I know my colleague, Paula Bradshaw, who chairs the Executive Office Committee, is currently taking advice and is seeking to recall Michelle O'Neill before that committee to account further for her actions. And we will consider at that stage whether any further action is required.
And of course, Owen, we can't end this interview without talking about the instrumental, fundamental place Top Table had on your career.
Absolutely.
Top Table was the programme it's no longer on the BBC, where young people got to debate political issues.
For my sin, Stephen, I am a Top Table prodigy, and it's all been downhill from there.
Well, look, congratulations. And let's see what the future holds for you, Owen. And we look forward to talking to you often on this programme. And thanks for coming on today. Well done, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. They're at it again in that BBC newsroom. You see, they give us a wee titbit there. Birds. One reference. Birds. What are curlew? Does anybody know? In the name of Sweet Mama, can anybody ring this programme and tell me what these curlew, we now know they're birds, what are they? How big are they? How small are they? What do they eat? A big long beak, do they? It's called a bill. I know nothing about the. I've never heard of a curlew in my entire life. Some people are suggesting there might be some down in Strangford Lough. I have no idea. Big Barbara, good morning.
Morning, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm all right, thank you.
Well, I know that you've gone off this subject, but let me just say this. I'm devastated at them taking the Bourne Bridge away.
Tell me why.
Because I was reared over there, and my mummy was reared over there, and my great granny was reared over there, and that's gone on from years and years and years when I was a child. And that's all being used by the Bourne Bridge and Sandy Row. And there's another thing you forgot about. That Bourne Bridge, when they're taking it away, it'll go on to the end of the Grosvenor Road and across there's Albert Street. That's going to affect all the people in that end of the town.
Why are they taking that away? They're flattening it, aren't they?
I think it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well,
anyway, that's
that
said. But what I wanted to know is, what about Audrey, your mum?
She's in hospital.
Yes, you know that. I heard that yesterday.
I think she's going to be all right. First of all, to say to everybody, so what happened was, I was presenting the show yesterday morning.
I know, I was listening to you.
And I got a phone call to say that my mum had been found on the floor.
Yeah.
And look, I'm sorry for leaving the show early, but I'm not sorry, because she's always going to come first, right?
Oh, that's true. That's
so
true.
I was really, really worried, and the person that found her was really worried too. So I rushed up to the house, and I think she's going to be all right, and she's
great.
In the hospital. I'll tell you what, though, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, right? Because of the nature of what I do, the nature of what the Nolan Show is, we're dealing with politics every day, and there's never a day goes by where there's not controversy in this country. And that brings a lot of flack, right? And that brings a lot of pressure, and that brings a lot of criticism and all that goes with it.
I know that.
You see, yesterday, my phone did not stop with people from all around this country texting me to say, was I all right, and to ask if my mum was all right. And I'm talking about friends. I'm talking about this amazing place where I work, the BBC, where this institution, this company, this building, it just wraps its arms around you with kind of love and support. And also politicians. Some of them who refuse to engage with this programme for their own reasons, whatever, reaching out to me to say, are you okay?
So when
I was up in that hospital last night and I walked out of it, and it was late and I sat in the car, it genuinely meant something to me that you all were thinking about me. So I want to say thank you. It's a long-winded way of saying thank you to everyone.
Well, even though we say things about you and keep you going and all, you know, we rate with you and carry on, we say things about you being fat and all, but the people does care about you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
And Stephen, the next time you're doing a programme on people's health, right, put me on and I'll tell you all about my health.
I will.
All right? Because I still have a problem, a big problem.
All right.
And I would like to let people know to see what they thought of what I done.
We definitely
about
will.
About my health.
Well, I promise you we will. All right? And thanks
all
again.
All right, my dear. And let me know about Audrey from time to time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Morning. Good morning. Okay, 8 minutes past 10. Last night's Spotlight on the BBC was looking at homelessness. And it revealed that some people are turning to hospital emergency departments to use as night shelters to seek warmth and safety. Mandy McCauley spoke to a young couple who had been living on the streets. Their accommodation had fallen through. They decided a night in the ED at the Mater Hospital was the best option.
To be warm and to probably get 2 or 3 hours sleep, and that's it. And see what we can do. Be warm for a while, get a bit of heat into us, be safe, not have to worry for a while.
It's heat and warmth. There's a couple of hours sleep tonight.
Safe and being on the street, but all these people around us. Like, we're kids in our heads, to be honest. Like, we're not ready to be on the street.
If you haven't seen it, it's called Nowhere to Call Home, and it's on the BBC iPlayer now. Nowhere to Call Home. I've been speaking to Andy and Julie. They've both experienced living on the streets. Andy began by telling me about his own experience.
Well, being on the streets is not a very nice place, and it's unsafe at night too, and the drugs that I was using to keep myself awake up until the morning time was unbelievable. And I also OD'd on the street as well.
What drugs were you using, Andy?
I was on like class A cocaine.
Okay.
And then I was smoking cannabis, and then I was taking like different kind of tablets, and ended up, can't even remember getting to the hospital or anything because I collapsed. And it's just not a nice place to be.
How did you end up in the streets?
Well, I was accused of being in an organisation when I wasn't, because I had mental health problems, and me and my partner were out having dinner, and we were told my mum's house was on fire, and whenever I got up, it just put me unbelievably mad. I mean mad. Because I was put through torture every day. I was being tortured by these ones. And they wanted me to drug deal for them, and I wasn't doing it because of the background and what they do with you and what they do to your family.
The pressure on you then to deal drugs in the area, you said no to these paramilitaries, and what did they do when you said no? How did they react?
Well, they put me away from my family. They did. And I couldn't see my family at all. I had no contact, no nothing. And
so that's you homeless then?
That was me definitely back on homeless, and got in contact with the housing. They didn't really want to know me. They didn't. And it was like every day is a fighting battle. When you get up out of bed, no one lad, you're going to take drugs every day to support yourself and to keep yourself alert at night times. It's just unbelievably, it is hard. It's just a thing that goes through your mind about your mental health. That's another thing I was going to say to you, Stephen. I have actually tried to take my life, and that's the God's honest truth. I didn't want to go on anymore. My life, I just feel like damaged goods. Nobody wants you. Mental health didn't want to know me at that stage at all.
Where do you get the money to buy drugs?
Well, you see, I was getting my monthly money, and I was mainly buying the drugs from it when I should have been looking after myself better, which I didn't do, because drugs took a part of my life down in Derry. And then when I came back to Belfast, I had no help from nobody apart from the Welcome Centre. And that was through Ellie and then Joanne and then Aoife are the ones that have helped me through my journey.
I know all about the fantastic work that the Welcome Centre does. When you're out there on a cold night and you're looking around you, you're not just cold.
No, you're more scared, more or less worried. All your problems come back to your head, and
how dangerous is it on the streets, Andy?
It is very dangerous, very dangerous. I've actually had an iPhone 14 stolen on me.
You've what?
I had my good iPhone stolen on me, 14 Pro Max.
Okay.
And I had my clothes stolen on me, my money stolen on me. You just can't sleep on the streets at all. It's not safe.
They come and they take your shoes and things, do they?
Yeah, take everything on you. Yeah, that's why you can't sleep. You're more or less, you're turning to drugs to keep yourself awake and to prepare yourself for that night.
Let me speak to Julie as well. Stay there, Andy. Julie has been homeless on and off for 30 years. Good morning to you, Julie.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Are you homeless now?
I am indeed. I'm living in temporary accommodation. And I've lived here for just over a year. It's provided by the Welcome Centre. And it's a place where you can stay the 2 years so that you can put things in your life back together. So when you are rehomed, you have a better chance of, you know, staying where you are. Because I've never actually lived anywhere for longer than 5 years from when I was born.
Why not?
Well, I lived in Australia. And I had a father who died of a heroin overdose when I was 8. So from a very young age, I had post-traumatic stress. My mother, she stuck me on a plane to my grandmother here in Northern Ireland. And then I took up with a guy in the palm oil trees. I was oblivious to this, naive to this, because it was Australian. And then that was the road to domestic violence, where me and my kids, which I nearly died having one of my kids actually, through domestic violence, were in and out of women's aid. And at that time, on and off, like I had really good jobs in those years. I worked most of my life. Women's aid were able to support me and my kids. But as I got in like my 30s, I then had a problem with drugs and addiction and palm oil trees and being moved out, put out more times than the bin, felt like at times. The situation, I mean, I watched Spotlight last night and I just looked and I seen everything, you know, that those kids go through, especially when they're out of care. You know, there's no support for them. And then they're put into this mad, like Andy said there, and I know Andy, he knows me. My nickname on the streets is Mama Jules. I know what it's like. I've watched them, you know, girls partner up usually with a fella, and it doesn't matter if they bait them or not. They'd rather be bait by them than have to face, you know, other threats, you know. Does that kind of talk too much, Nolan, did it?
No, you're not talking too much. I'm listening to every word.
Yeah.
Julie, and when you're on the streets and, to be honest, part of society labels you and looks down on you.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a period in my life. I've been in prison too. It's nothing I would never hide. You know what I mean? I'm not ashamed of anything in my past. But at one time, I was clean and sober for 5 years. I was in rehab. I was on my final week and my youngest son died of a drug overdose. Yeah.
My goodness.
I still stayed clean and sober for 5 years. You know, it was only like situations happening after, which were probably me not being able to deal with it, with the grief of losing a son. And then I had another child on the Teen Challenge program. You know, I've had so much trauma within my family, lost so many members to drugs.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, I've had to administer naloxone on several occasions to save people's lives. Do you know what I mean? Look, this isn't a lifestyle I chose. The journey of my life has brought me to here, but I have been able to, because this temporary accommodation is a unique thing that the Welcome are trying for women, because well, us women are far more vulnerable on the streets, because we can be sex worked, we can be raped, you know, obviously, you know, all physical abuse as well as obviously in the risk of bloodborne viruses, which the community are up in arms about. But, I mean, we need a different kind of care. Do you know what I mean? And that's why we get treated maybe better than the boys. But it really isn't as fair on them, because I have seen young lads get out of prison, don't even get a crash bed at night. And I mean, literally a crash bed is strict. You're going to have 7. You're not allowed out to 7 in the morning. You know, you don't know who you're sharing a room with. Yes, that's a roof over your head for that night, but there's not even enough of them to cope with the demand of homelessness in the city.
I remember last year I was out on the streets for a television programme. I spoke to some people who were living on the streets, and I wanted to bring them in for a meal. And I just saw some people when I was walking in with them. And to be honest, some customers when I walked in with these people, looking down on them. And I thought to myself, well, do you know what? If you're looking down on these people, you're looking down on me. Get stuffed. Clear off. And fighting that stigma is something that society can do something about. You've got a roof over your head now, Andy, too, right?
Yeah.
How much does that mean to you?
It means everything to me. It means that I'm getting my life back on track and I'm getting the help and the support that I need through the Welcome Centre and everything. And I agree with Jules, yeah. drugs do take over your life in a big way, where you see things so differently, you're so off your face, you can't remember, you do stupid things, you could end up in custody, you could end up in court, you know what I mean, locked up, banged away.
Are you both going to be okay?
Oh, yes, I'll be okay, yes.
I hope so.
Yeah, we know each other. We have our own community.
Yep, oh, we do, all right, Joe, don't we?
Yes, we all look out for each other, no matter what stage we're at. Should we be at the stage of you're an absolute mess, you know, from one day to the next, you're saying to yourself, is this kid going to be alive tomorrow till they're getting on their feet? Maybe they go to prison for a while, come back out, they're fresh. We all look out for each other no matter what stage. I can't walk through the town, and Andy knows it too. You know,
I'm the same, Jules.
With compassion in my heart, you know. It's by the grace of God, it's anybody at any time. And the Palmilges have got a lot to answer for. Because it's through them that this has happened. They're the ones on their back. They are lining their pockets. And the cheek of their wives have the time to go out and get them out of here. Well, sure, we've just bought your caravan or your new Audi. Do you know what I mean? And whenever the behaviour of the drug addict doesn't fit society, they're put out. Do you know? And then they burn the welcome centre down where you actually get put out if you're taking drugs in it. Do you know what I mean? But they don't buy drugs in the welcome. They go into the communities close by. Stephen, it is absolute. The society is so messed up.
Well,
Luke, you know what I mean?
Thank you so much for talking to me today. Thank you.
No
I really
problem.
Appreciate it.
Anytime.
I hope you're both okay. Well, Jude White, listening to this from the Welcome Centre, he's the chair of it. Good morning, Jude.
Good morning.
Just salt to the earth people there who are hearing from, who have their own struggles in life. How do we tackle the stigma, Jude, the society looking down on these people?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered how much preparation I did for this programme. Nothing, and I mean nothing, could represent the reality of the situation than your last number of speakers, and I commend their honesty, their bravery in coming on the radio, and they in many ways have said what 1,000 committees, 100 reports about reports, meetings about meetings, which go on forever. Nobody chooses this lifestyle. And I'm sure quietly in people's homes this morning, there's very few families that cannot, you know, say they've escaped alcoholism or drug addiction, you know, but, you know, there are their extended families. It is not a choice. An illness, and it's a devastating illness, destroys the person, then the family, and ultimately the community. So, the place we are now is that even facilities that we did offer during daylight hours, we have had to move because we can't guarantee the safety of staff or the safety, indeed, of the people who use it. And, you know, it would be so easy this morning to come on here and stick the boot into the housing executive and supporting people and garden lands. And, you know, that would be unfair. They are very, very, you know, off the welcome organisation. The problem is this is, in the case of our organisation, it's not a money problem. We have the money. We simply cannot find anywhere where the community, or indeed the business community, will give us support. And that's not a criticism of the community, or indeed, you know, the business community. The problem is that this city is awash with drugs. Your children are dying on the streets. And really, it's somebody else's problem, Stephen. That's the bottom line. Nobody wants us in the middle of their community, and no business wants us or our service users in the middle of where they trade.
So what's your planning around that? What are you going to do?
We are working night, day, all day, every day to try and get alternative premises. And
have you
again,
found somewhere?
No, we haven't. And it's not an issue of money. We will be paying rent, and we are good tenants who will maintain property. We need to find somewhere where we're not annoying a community, and we're not annoying a business community. And I mean, thank you for, I mean, forgive the opportunity. I am appealing now. I'm on my bended knee. Well, I do have a bed on, like many of our service users. I don't sleep too well in it this last few weeks. I am appealing for anybody within who has some property. I'm appealing in particular to the churches. There are many churches in the central area of Belfast to give us, even on a temporary basis, 6 months to 9 months. We don't want charity. We will pay rent. We will look after your property until we get over this impasse, because the winter's coming and folk need to be taken off the street and given, you know, basic help. But more importantly than basic help, they need to be put into the system so we can get them into homes.
And Jude, you were quite complimentary there about the minister, and I'm not trying to goad you into being anything otherwise. But is government, is local government, there are plenty of publicly owned buildings. Our government owns a lot of property. Have they not offered anywhere?
Well, you would think that. You'd think between the council and the government, there's more property land around Belfast that we could buy. And I often wonder, is indeed the hidden agenda, there's the property, but people don't want us and don't want the client group. And I mean, I hate even using that word, you know, client group. They're human beings. They're your brothers, your sisters, and they're the salt of the earth. I've never been assaulted ever in my life by any service user, and they're not a danger in any way to the public. They're a danger overwhelmingly to themselves. When I was talking about Gordon, he came down and saw us, was very sympathetic, but I'm sure you heard Grania on the talkback program last night. There's an issue here, a massive issue of a shortage of public sector housing, of housing for people. And, you know, there's 50,000 people, I suppose, on this waiting list. And I understand the public don't really have a lot of sympathy for what they see or people who are voluntarily taking drugs. But for the grace of God, you know, go out.
Well, I think
this is not a lifetime choice.
I think your question today about the churches, and we hear lots of messaging from the churches, preaching to people, teaching people, should I say, that the important thing to do is be charitable and help when you can. Where are these churches helping in this situation? They literally own loads of buildings throughout Northern Ireland. Where are they stepping up? And where is local government stepping up? Where they abandoned the empty buildings that we have throughout Northern Ireland. And this winter, they're going to be empty while people are sleeping on the streets. That's what we need to ask. And look, Jude has dropped off, his line's dropped off, and we're coming up to the end of the programme today. But we'll continue to follow those questions. We'll very much follow them. Okay, I think we've time for Jim in Ballinure about these curlew birds. Good morning, Jim.
Curlew, yes, that's correct, yes.
I've never heard of them.
Stephen, I can't believe that you have never heard of them or don't know anything about them.
No, that newsroom, that BBC newsroom, the curlew this, the curlew that. I want them to tell me what they are.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
And they won't do it.
They probably don't know. So I'm going to tell you. They're a wading bird.
A what?
Wading. They go into the soft ground where there's water and stuff like that.
I should get you to write up a wee article for the BBC News Online.
I can indeed, certainly I can.
So they wade. How does a bird wade? I still don't understand.
They've got big feet, long legs, and like if you stand on
like
the
myself.
Ground, you're going to sink into it, or I'm going to sink into it for that matter.
Yes.
So they have large toes or large, well, that's what I'll call them, large feet, and the big, long, skinny legs, and they have a beak that is bent downwards, turned downwards like a banana. And they're like a brown and white colour, mottled.
This is the spitting image of someone on the Nolan Show. I'll not name him.
Oh, no, don't do that, no.
No.
You can tell me.
And are these birds beautiful?
Oh, they are, yes, they are indeed. But they're endangered.
They're endangered?
They're endangered, so we need to preserve our wildlife.
Yes. Well, they're breeding more of them, according to
Well, they're reading more, but not half enough. Not half enough.
Right. And how do you get them bred?
Well, Stephen, don't go down that road now.
Right.
If you don't know what your age has...
No, but what I mean is, how do you encourage them to breed? Do you get more of them together? I know how they literally breed.
Well, obviously you get more together. Like,
and feed them well.
You do, and you provide the proper habitat for them.
Yes.
And you obviously you don't disturb them. If you were breeding, you wouldn't let you be disturbed.
That's a whole other story. Don't go down that route either. Jim, thank you very much.
No problem, Stephen. Bye.
We'll see you on BBC One tonight, 10:40. Bye-bye, everyone.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America's relationship with China. Diplomacy between the world's two largest economies remains characteristically choppy, but could the result of the U.S. presidential election unlock a calmer future? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.